James, his wife sent me. I wrote to her, and she gave me some of the way he worked in the how he got the Blue Cross going, and I incorporated it
You're
into this.
referring to your
My
brother-in-law,
brother-in-law,
Abraham
Abraham Israel, yes,
Osterhoff,
who was the founder of the National Blue Cross and Blue Shield. Now, I can leave out, let's see. The reason that I'm putting this in, well, I know what I can leave out here. I can leave out some of the people he's talking about who developed into important members of the community, like Rebecca Davidson, who became
No,
a
I think
pianist.
that should be incorporated if they have a community impact, had a
They
community impact.
had,
Not
yes.
necessarily because she was a famous
Yes, they
musician.
had. Well, actually, this. Raise your finger anytime you want me to, and you can cut out a few
All
lines
right,
because.
suppose this is the record
Right.
which your husband wrote.
Yes.
All right,
And
if you'll read it
do you
to us.
want to ask me, and then I can tell you,
Well, I
or
have already asked
oh, you
you.
have, all right.
Start with this account.
Yes, start this account of
Yes.
the early life. You want me to say that? I'm going to tell you, or rather read you, a letter that was written by my husband Israel Osroff to his nephews, Andrew and Abraham Osroff Jr., who had asked to be told something about their father's early life. He was a very busy man, and since he married late and the boys came at the time that he was busiest, they didn't have a chance to communicate as most fathers and sons do. But my husband was able to fill the gap after their father had died, and this is the letter that he wrote to these two boys telling them about their father. I will be glad to turn this letter over to you, as it does include, in addition to Abraham's early life and his education and early career, the founding and the establishment of the National Blue Cross, which was his own creation. My father, mother, and brother Abe came to the United States in 1891 from Eastern Europe. My brother was about 2 years old at the time, and I was born in Pittsburgh 6 months after their arrival. After working in a pants factory for a short period, our parents started a grocery store in the Hill District, which later became a ghetto. Several years later, they moved the store to Lower Fifth Avenue, which is only a stone's throw from the Golden Triangle. We call this location and our surroundings our street. This is a street where we lived and grew up together until Abe reached the age of 16 or 17. We were very close friends in each other's company almost entirely, all through our elementary and high school days. We used to take long walks along the bluff, which is the Boulevard of the Allies today, overlooking the Monongahela River. On our walks, he talked a lot. I talked a little and mostly listened. We discussed the barges on the river carrying coal to the steel mills up the river. Isn't it wonderful, he would say, to be a native of Pittsburgh, the steel capital of the world? And in the next breath, he would add, wouldn't it be gratifying if I could do something to make the people who work in the mills live better and in more comfortable housing? Later, he became actively interested in the housing situation for the disadvantaged. He was instrumental in organizing with Dr. Francis Tyson, professor of economics at the University of Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh Housing Association.
May I interrupt for a second? Will you just give us his educational background, your brother-in-law's?
Right now,
Now.
yes. After high school, he went to the University of Pennsylvania, where he received his bachelor's degree in pre-law. He then came to Pittsburgh and received his master's degree in sociology at the University of Pittsburgh.
That's fine. Now continue.
Well, I was telling you about the housing that he was so closely involved in. He had written an article in The Survey, which was a national magazine, the article entitled "A Soho Hillside," which culminated in a thorough study of housing in this area. On our walks, we talked about the Pirates, Honus Wagner, Fred Clark, Tommy Leach. In those days, the Pirates were great competitors and contended for championship throughout the entire season. We witnessed the championship games between the Pirates and the Washington Senators and saw the famous Walter Johnson pitch one in one of the games. We also talked about some of the English and American poets and essayists whom we studied in school. We were particularly fond of Edgar Allan Poe, Carlyle, Ruskin, and Coleridge. In the last few years of the 19th century and the first decade of the 20th, the city of Pittsburgh promoted huge yearly exhibitions of Pittsburgh products in Exposition Hall on the site of the Gateway Center. We visited these exhibitions regularly. I recall the Heinz and the Arbuckle coffee exhibits, and distinctly the Arbuckle exhibit, which showed coffee being packed automatically. This was no doubt the beginning of automation applied to today's industry. The exposition also had a large music hall where we heard Sousa's band and Criatura's band. These are among some of our pleasant memories. On our street, next door to us, there lived a famous family whose daughter, Rebecca Davidson, became a protege of Walter Damrosch, the famous conductor, and later became a well-known pianist. Another neighbor on our street was Peter Glick, who later became a prominent lawyer and was appointed Secretary of Labor in the Pennsylvania State Cabinet. One of our other young friends, Frank Glick, became a star on the Princeton football team, another a prominent lawyer and civic leader. Here also on our street, your father grew up and later became the most famous of all in this group. These and a few other boys and girls on this street later succeeded in breaking the ghetto barrier and becoming outstanding in their fields. We lived in a four-story walk-up building, which in today's parlance would be called a tenement. In those days, it was considered adequate and living pretty well. Our store and living quarters were on the first floor. The upper three floors were rented out to various tenants. After we moved into this building, a serious fire broke out on the top floor. I remember seeing a woman jumping from the third floor to save her life, her fall broken by onlookers, but she was nevertheless injured quite seriously. We stood on the sidewalk waiting for the fire equipment to arrive, and of course we could do nothing to alleviate the situation. Abe suddenly realized that our dog was in the building. He rushed into the store before the fire reached the first floor and brought him out safely. I remember seeing him fondling and caressing the dog. The fire finally was brought under control. Our store and living quarters were only slightly damaged, and we managed to return to normal living within a short period. In his early teens, Abe had two eye operations to correct a position of one of his eyeballs, and I remember him crying from pain as my father carried him from the doctor's office. He had severe migraine headaches, which kept him out of school for days at a time. We witnessed a transaction when my father started a pants business. A business conversation took place on the street in front of our store between my father and a pants cutter. My father handed him $900 in cash and told him to go ahead and buy equipment to set up a small pants factory. The equipment consisted of a cutting table, cutting knives to cut the cloth, several single needle Singer sewing machines, a button fastening machine, iron pressers, and a few other items. Space was rented in an upper floor close by. Cloth and trimmings were purchased from New York suppliers. Several experienced machine operators were hired, and this small business was in operation in a matter of 2 or 3 weeks. In his spare time, Abe operated the button fastening machine and earned 50 to 75 cents an afternoon. As a student in Central High School, he got into an argument with the principal and was transferred to another school. It was a serious argument in which he accused the principal of improper relations with his secretary. Abe was later proven to be right as the secretary became pregnant. The principal admitted being the father of the baby and was publicly dismissed from his position. As a teenager, Abe was a dissenter, a nonconformist, a trailblazer, a critic, a shrewd investigator, and a prober. He was rebellious, dissatisfied, and unhappy with social conditions, and eager for a chance to adjust inequities existing in our society. He was even then planning to help the underprivileged. After graduating high school, he entered the University of Pennsylvania. There was a very close relationship between us, and I missed him as a brother and a companion. At the university, he became a member of the Zoosophic Society, an exclusive literary club. My mother was opposed to my going to college after graduating high school because of economic conditions, but Abe persuaded my parents to raise the money for me to enter Penn. I matriculated in 1911. Abe graduated the year I entered. He then entered Penn Law School after getting his bachelor's degree, and we were together for another year at Penn. At about that time, he became ill of an intestinal disorder and was treated by doctors in Philadelphia at the University Hospital, later returning to Pittsburgh after recovery from his illness. For several years after my father started the pants business, with the help of my mother, he operated both the grocery business and the pants business. The new one prospered, and they decided to sell the grocery, and father devoted his entire time to the Penn Trouser Company. My brother induced them to move to the suburbs of the city. They found a house which suited their needs on McPherson Boulevard and Point Breeze, which they purchased and lived there for quite some time. After his illness and return to Pittsburgh, Abe entered the University of Pittsburgh, where he got his master's in social welfare. A short time later, he became associated with the Public Charities Association of Pennsylvania, a public organization supported by state funds. He made an investigation of children's institutions of Allegheny County. His investigation showed living and educational conditions very poor and inadequate. His findings were not popular with the politicians in the state capitol, and the Pennsylvania legislature appointed a committee to investigate his findings. I attended the meetings of the committee, which were held in council chambers in Pittsburgh. Abe had the famous attorney Clarence Darrow as his lawyer, and as was expected, the committee disapproved his findings. Naturally, they would. The impact of his investigation was later felt by the Pittsburgh and Allegheny County community, and there was considerable improvement in the operation of children's institutions within a short period. Abe had a dynamic personality, a driving force which showed itself in any project he started. He was not interested in financial gains from his various works. He was engrossed in working for the good of all. He was in the original group that started the YMWHA of Pittsburgh and was a prominent speaker at the ceremonies when the present building at Belfield Avenue was dedicated. After his work was completed with the Public Charities Association of Pennsylvania, he left Pittsburgh and worked with several philanthropic organizations in New York, among them the Bureau of Philanthropic Research. In this work, he was associated with Dr. Ludwig B. Bernstein, whom I met on one of my trips to New York, and was years later, to become my father-in-law. At about this time, the United States became involved in World War I. I enlisted as a private and was stationed for a short period at Camp Lee, Virginia. I wrote Abe that I was not happy there, and through his connections with Newton D. Baker, the Secretary of War, he arranged for my transfer, in quotes, for the good of the service, to New York. There I spent the rest of my Army career commuting between the City Athletic Club, where I was Abe's permanent guest, and the gas defense plant on Long Island, which was my new Army assignment. Abe received a first lieutenantship just as the war was ending, and he didn't have an opportunity to serve. We both witnessed the false armistice just as the war was ending, The armistice was a celebration at Times Square, New York, on November 7th, then the authentic armistice on November 11th. Abe was associated with R.H. Macy in New York for several years and for some time was their buying representative in London. During his work in New York, both in the field of welfare and of merchandising, he became acquainted and closely associated with the most prominent bankers and merchants in the big city. After his work was finished at Macy's, he came back to Pittsburgh because of my father's illness. I had been in the pants business with my father for some years, and we were prospering. When my father became seriously ill, I prevailed upon Abe to enter our business, and he was with me for about a year. It so happened that the director of the Montefiore Hospital passed away suddenly, and Dr. Bernstein, knowing of Abe's interest in social work, appointed him to take his place. He was a great administrator and turned things around soon after his appointment. He put the hospital on a sound financial and professional basis. On the way, he had difficulty with the board of directors, who were reluctant to follow his plans, but he got his way. During his work at Montefiore as director, in spite of this back-breaking day and night job, he developed the group medical insurance plan, which was later known as the Blue Cross. The origin of the Blue Cross was actually Abe's own idea. Quite a long time before he developed the program, someone in Texas had tried the idea and failed. The only part of the Texas plan that he used was that of prepaying hospital bills. He spent about 2 years of his life, as well as his own money, while administering the Montefiore Hospital, traveling to Harrisburg to ensure the passage and enabling legislation, while the doctors, insurance companies, and hospitals lobbied against him. The next step was to gather a few leading citizens of Pittsburgh to form a board and help set up a financial structure. He then borrowed $25,000 from the Buell Foundation, which was to be paid back in 5 years, but was paid back by the end of the first year. The premise of Blue Cross was to enable every man to pay his own way in the hospital by merely presenting a little card. The whole concept was the outgrowth of Abe's hospital experience, seeing people who were always able to handle their own affairs and pay their own bills being literally wiped out by the huge hospital costs that they had to pay when a family member experienced a long illness. To bring the plan to the people, Abe visited the United States Steelworkers Union and explained it, securing their enthusiastic cooperation. He called on numerous large business establishments to interest them, as this was to be a group hospitalization program. He also visited the heads of hospitals in order to get their cooperation. The one which gave the best cooperation of all was the Mercy Hospital, which could see in it a great deal for the people. When he was ready to resign the Montefiore Hospital directorship, the organization was about ready to start. Not too long after the Blue Cross was successful, he organized the Blue Shield and used the business organization and equipment of Blue Cross so that the bills and payments to hospitals were made by Blue Cross. This was to save the expense of separate organizations. Years later, Blue Shield took over their own billing. Abe was one of the first to use the IBM equipment. He became chairman of the Blue Cross Commission, which was by then a national organization, and was influential in guiding other Blue Cross plans throughout the nation. He was honored by his peers in many ways, in Montreal, Canada, and by the International Blue Cross Organization. Throughout his career, he was constantly fighting the board, who, as time went on and new people took places, became more money-minded than civic-minded and constantly wanted to raise the rates. This is still going on, and the people pay the price. Abe was really engrossed in this huge undertaking to the exclusion of almost everything else. He paid a price in health and interpersonal and family relationships for the staggering toll that this behemoth took from him every single day. Even if his name is forgotten, the creation of the Blue Cross and what it has done and is doing for the people will remain his monument. This was indeed his life.
It's very interesting, very informative.
Well, I incorporated Irma's in the last.
Would you like to tell us about the career your father had in Pittsburgh as an influential member of the community?
Yes, I would love to. He came to Pittsburgh in 1920.
Ida, would you tell us his full name?
Oh, his full name is Ludwig Behr Bernstein, B-E-H-R is the second, Bernstein. He had come from New York, which I told you about in the previous discussion, where he was head of the Bureau of Philanthropic Research. And he had a long career in social work, which started with the orphanage way back in 1901. And when social work was not a profession, and he was one of the nine Jewish men who articulated the standards and the criteria by which social work should be run. He was brought to Pittsburgh by a very charming man by the name of Aaron Cohen, who was a member of a firm of Cohen and Aaron. They had a business, which I think is still in existence, somewhere west of Pittsburgh. They were in the chinaware business. Mr. Aaron was Marcus Lester Aaron, and some of the people are very active in the community to this day. When Aaron Cohen came, he interviewed my father and told him that up to this point, the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies was a fiscal organization which had been organized by a small group of men who resented being approached every other day for a contribution to this agency or that agency. And they felt the time had come in the Jewish community when some type of orderly organization should take place. He told my father about Miss Minnie Affelder, who was the sister of one of the important lawyers in Pittsburgh. Miss Affelder was a maiden lady, very dear, very bright woman who knew every Jewish person in Pittsburgh. At that time, Pittsburgh organizations were run mainly by the German Jews who had come over a couple of generations before, who had made their way in the world and were doing well financially, and who felt the responsibility for the immigrants who were coming over at that time. When Dr. Bernstein came, he told them that the first thing that he would do would be to review the agencies which were now affiliated and to try to put them on a proper working standard, and after that would help to develop others. You might be interested in knowing what agencies were part at that time, would you?
Yes.
All right. Some of them are functioning today. Some of them have changed their function but are still operating. There was a Montefiore Hospital, which was on the hill. The Guskey Orphanage, which up till, I would say, about 1932, functioned as an orphan asylum. And then because it had been found that children adjusted better in foster homes, closed its doors, and is now operating as an agency that is interested in children and helps them in other ways. The Irene Kaufman Settlement is still functioning. It's functioning differently today, but it's certainly an integral part of our community as of 1975. The United Hebrew Relief was the agency that gave the dole. My father was horrified by having it called the Reunited Hebrew Relief, and the first thing he did was change it to the Jewish Social Service Bureau, which had a much kinder kind of connotation. He had to do a great deal of work there in raising the standards because nobody really knew what to do. And, of course, along the way, he ran into problems because some of the people who were in charge on the boards didn't like a newcomer coming from New York with his big ideas and changing things, but he had his way, and it has become a very fine agency. Today, it's a Jewish Family and Children's Service. It no longer gives relief, in quotes, but it does all the other things that families need today. The Emma Farm Association is functioning today. There's a beautiful camp, which is now in Moundsville, West Virginia.
It's part of the Irene Kaufman
Settlement. Yes, it's
settlement.
Part of the, that's right, part of the Irene Kaufman Settlement, which has become the center, which has become the Jewish Community Center, with the Y. The Jewish Home for the Aged was also on the hill. It was also a benighted place where people sat and waited to die. It is now, as you know, a functioning, beautiful institution which people clamor to get into. They always have a long waiting list. It is one of the better homes for older people in the country and recognized as such.
It now has the hospital, and in conjunction with that, the Riverview apartments.
That's right. And it could have many more beds and still not be filled, but of course people are getting older now, and we know that the population is aging, and with it come all the problems that come with aging. The next is the philanthropic activities of the Council of Jewish Women, which in the early days consisted of free lunches in the Irene Kaufman Settlement, the penny lunch, the milk well, service to the foreign born, helping the people who arrived in this country to adjust, and teachers in the Forbes Public School who would give lessons in English during the summer months when the public schools were closed down. There were other functions, but these were some that were under the affiliation of the Federation. Did you want to ask about the Hebrew Free Loan?
No. I think you proceed as you have been. That's fine.
The Hebrew Free Loan was started to help businessmen who in those days perhaps were hucksters, and the horse died and they needed a new horse, and they needed $50 to purchase a horse. And they could come and purchase the horse and pay off $2 a week.
No interest.
With no interest, of course. And a man whose wife was ill and who needed some money for surgery, or a child whom they wanted to send to college and they didn't have the money, and here they could borrow and could pay it off as they were able. The Hebrew Free Loan was started by some very dear men. They were older men, and my father, who believed in young people on boards, got Morris Balter, who was with the Balter Paper Company, and Joe Goldstein, who was then the president of the Eagle Groceries, and my husband, Israel Ozeroff, who was then in the pants business, to be on the board with all these elderly men. And they gradually got younger people. Today they have many more young ones than old ones, and they even have some women on the board. It was notably absent. There were very few women on anything in those days. Now, the Jewish Consumptives Relief Society was in Denver, but because tuberculosis was rampant in the early part of the 20th century, the Jewish Federation used to send a certain amount of money to them and also send people to them. The Hebrew Sheltering and Immigrant Aid Society is now part of the United Jewish Appeal, and they help settle immigrants places other than in Israel. The National Jewish Hospital for Consumptives is similar to the Jewish Consumptives Relief Society. I believe that it's the one I wish I could think of the name of that place. It's out in Colorado.
Denver.
Denver, yes. And they have, they're now working on lung diseases
asthma,
other than asthma and other
diseases. Related.
Yes, I can't think of it. There's a group here in Pittsburgh, an auxiliary group that belongs
National
to that.
National Hospital.
Yes.
National Jewish Hospital, I believe it's...
Yes. Now, the National Farm School, I really do not know anything about. The National Farm School, but it could have been the experiment that they had in Vineland, New Jersey, for Jews who came over and who couldn't find work.
Wasn't that through Roosevelt's time?
No, this antedated Roosevelt by many, many years. And the people who ran that, this is another whole other story which I can't begin to tell you now, but I believe that this could have been it. At any rate, money was sent to them. Now, these were the agencies
that
my father found.
That's a fascinating review of charity as a charity and help.
The Jewish Home for Babies not on there?
Guskey
no,
Home.
They wouldn't go in. The Jewish Home for Babies, I must tell you about that. That was a thorn in my father's side. Would you like me to tell you?
Sure.
They did have separate
I'm not on now, am I?
Yes, you are.
Oh, I am. Yes, the Jewish Home for Babies was the one exception to all these agencies who were very happy to share in the expertise that they felt they were going to get, and they did not fight it too hard.
Must have been Sally Mazer.
No, it wasn't Sally Mazer. Sally was involved with the Y, but that was a little bit later. Sally's still living, by the way. She's in the Ivy Nursing Home, and she's just living the life of Riley. I visit her once in a while. The Jewish Home for Babies was started, God knows how or when, by a group of very fine, dedicated, kind Jewish women who did not know the first thing about caring for anybody. And Mrs. Barnett Davis, who was a great woman, and I believe whose life has been reviewed, and you have the whole story about her, she had great standards and great ideals, but she worked with other women who were illiterate, uneducated, and who hugged this project as the one thing that they could do. They could be on a board. They could have something for themselves. And I know that children, I learned this from children who grew up in that Jewish Home for Babies, used to be so hungry that they would go down at night and steal bread from the bread box. And that the children were treated in a way that was deplorable. And my father tried to bring her into the orbit of the Federation so they could change the standards, and she would have none of it. And when I sat in the office, because my desk was in Dr. Bernstein's office, I think I told you that I was his secretary for the year that I was here before I married, I used to hear these discussions, and they were on a very nice and polite basis, but you could hear the hostility between them, because she was adamant, and she would bring a little lady named Mrs. Bear Horvitz, and people, do you remember her? People of that type, who were very nice ladies. There was nothing wrong with them, but they just didn't know the first thing about caring for
they
children.
They had many tag days, and people did support the Jews.
Where did the money
they
go?
Did. Well, it went to the institution, but you can't support an institution on tag days. With the Federation, they had members. The members paid $10 a year. For $10 a year, you had a membership card, you had a vote, you could participate in discussions at the annual meeting, and people were allotted amounts according to the budgets that they presented. So it was done in an orderly way. But the Jewish Home for Babies never would go into the Federation. I don't know whether they're still, I don't think they're still in existence. Mm-hmm. Sally Mazer was the moving
President.
Force later. But
President
when Sally came in, Sally at least was a woman with some education and with some standards, so that by that time they were trying to do something a little bit better for these children. But it was a Jewish home for babies, and they had children of 16 and 17 and 18 who had no place to go. And it was really a thorn in the flesh of the whole Federation. I think that sort of covers it for now, except that there was one other agency, and it was not listed in this book that I looked these names up in, and that was the Hebrew Burial Society. Mm-hmm. And that antedated even the Federation, the 1912 Federation.
It's still in existence, isn't it?
It's still in existence, yes, and it still cares for these people who are unable to raise the money. Although with Social Security, there is a minimal amount that people do die and receive a death, that the families do, so that I believe that that program has probably changed to some extent. But that was one, and the other was the Pittsburgh House of Shelter, which was not mentioned, and that was an agency that would take people in for a night and give them a night's lodging and food. If they were traveling, lots of people came to New York as immigrants. They couldn't adjust there. They were put on a train and were told that they would stay overnight in Pittsburgh at the House of Shelter, and then they would go on to Chicago or to Cleveland or wherever, where they had relatives. But they had to have a place to stay, and the House of Shelter later on was taken over by the Federation, and a lady by the name of Mrs. Fry was given rent-free on a little house in Squirrel Hill, and she had accommodations for these people. And the House of Shelter, I think, has a board meeting once a year still. I believe so. Yes.
No function, though.
Well, they don't really need it now, but if people do come in and don't have a place to stay, there is a place. It's at Whiteman and Forbes.
Of course, now we have the Russian immigrants coming in here.
Yes.
Placed for a night.
That's
or two.
Right. Well, they need more than just a night or two. They need complete rehabilitation and resettlement. Now, let me see. I think you might be interested in knowing some of the people that were on this first board, because they are still important in the community today. The Sunsteins, the Lehmans, there was both Irving Lehman, Irving F., and A.C. Lehman, Albert Lehman. There was Leon Wertheimer, there was A. Leo Weil, the first. The Dreyfus family, who were interested in the Pittsburgh Pirates. Let me see, there were some others. Wertheimer, did I mention?
Oh, yes.
There was also another, Oppenheimer, A.M. Oppenheimer. He was really a great man, and he was one of the later presidents of the Federation. Aaron Cohn was president perennially for I don't know how many years, and then they passed a bylaw that there'd be a rotation after a given number of years. Now let me see. Would you be interested in knowing about the Federation when we came, or do you think it's not important?
I think it would be very good to hear about them.
Yes, except that I would imagine it's in a lot of histories, don't you think?
It could be. It could be. Maybe you'd rather not hear about it.
Give us a short resume. It's another viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first office of the Federation was in the Washington Trust Building. And in that same building...
Excuse me, Pauline, is this after your father organized it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when we arrived, was there. You see, the fiscal office was there, and Miss Affelder was ensconced... and was running that addressograph and sending out the bills every month, and a very valuable person because she knew everybody in Pittsburgh, and she was keenly interested, and being a maiden lady and not having other activities or interests, this was really her life.
And approximately when was it?
1920, when we arrived. My father accepted the job in 1920, and he came at the end of 1920, and we came in the beginning of 1921. The office in Washington Bank Building, in addition to the fiscal office and the executive director's office, also has the Jewish Social Service Bureau on the floor above. That was that had been the United Hebrew Relief. We found Pittsburgh very strange after living in New York. I remember that at one point my mother was ill. We lived on Darlington Road, and the doctor, a famous Dr. Finkelpearl, who was everybody's doctor, had called the one drugstore in Squirrel Hill, which was the Beacon Pharmacy, and I walked over through wheat fields to get to Beacon Street to pick up the prescription, because nobody delivered anything then. We bought our home shortly after we arrived, and my father owned it until he retired in 1937, and the house was then sold and became a rooming house, as many of the houses on Darlington and Bartlett and Beacon are today. People were very kind, they were very pleasant, they welcomed us, they made us feel very much at home. Whereas in New York, you live in an apartment and nobody dares ring your doorbell because they feel that they'll be intruding. Here the neighbor comes in and the neighbor says, "Oh, you're new in Pittsburgh, well, let me bring you something." And the next day they would arrive with something. And we were made very welcome by the board people, by the staff people. And when I was married a year later, there was a tremendous turnout of people at our wedding, most of whom I didn't even know. I think that gives you an idea of that sort of thing, and I don't think that we want to dwell on this too long. I think that one of the great things that my father did during his tenure, in addition to raising the standard, was to start some agencies that were really crying out to be started because they were needed. For example, the Jewish Big Brother Club, where boys who were growing up in homes where there was no father could have a man, a male idol, to whom they could relate.
Big Brother, sort of.
Big Brothers, yes, they have it today. And the they didn't have big sisters, but they had the Girls Bureau, which cared for girls who were working girls and living independently and not having the right kind of background or the right kind of friends. And for a while they even had the Council House, which is different from today's Council House. And that was sponsored by the Council of Jewish Women. And girls lived there, and they had their meals there, and they could socialize there, and in that way had a sort of a substitute for a home. Those were a couple of the agencies that he started, but mainly he raised the standards of those that were begun before he came. And the Montefiore Hospital moved to new quarters with beautiful appointments. And YMWHA, of course, built its own building in time. The Irene Kaufman Settlement expanded. The Jewish Home for the Aged built a lovely building. And in each instance, not only did they build the buildings, but they had to do it because the clientele increased and the need for further service increased. Then, of course, we ran into the Depression in 1929. That was a great problem because people who had been contributing were in a position when they needed help themselves. And I read in the minutes, which I consulted in the Federation minutes, that all of the staff in the Federation and all of the people in any of the agencies took voluntary cuts of a large part of their salaries in order to keep these projects going and to divert as much as they could of the money that was raised to carry on their programs. Now, I think that that speaks well for the kind of esprit de corps that was engendered in the Federation and in the agencies that were within its scope. Then in the 1930s, we had the Hitler period. It was at that period that Dr. Bernstein came up with an idea that did not succeed. When he saw what was happening with Hitler and how Jews were being made to feel their Judaism in such a way that they were being decimated, he felt that the whole Jewish community, whether it be Orthodox, Reform, Conservative, or nothing at all, should be joined together, should be united, and that this community should be the term.